This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehaya Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Libya needs to realize that crude oil is also available at other locations, and the global peak of oil demand is reached soon. But I hope that the Libyans start realizing this soon.
That was Wolfgang Porstei, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, on the country's need to take action to make its oil exports more attractive. Details coming up. Also, official election results show Mozambique's ruling Frelimo party has extended its 49-year rule, and Zambia is marking the 60th anniversary of independence from British rule. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. The election results have been announced in Mozambique, and the governing Frelimo party's candidate Daniel Chapo will succeed President Filipe Nyusi as the party leader, extending Frelimo's 49-year rule. VOA's Portuguese to Africa reporter Amancio Vilancolas is standing by in Mozambique's capital Maputo to brief us on the latest. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Amancio.
Thank you very much, Yehe. Actually, what you said is all true. Mr. Daniel Chapo, Frelimo's candidate, has been announced by Reverend Carlos Martinho, who is the head of the National Election Commission here in Mozambique. Frelimo got like 70% of the vote, and in second place comes Venancio Mondlane, who is a candidate supported by a party called Podemos, while Renamo comes on the third place. And while Frelimo members, the Frelimo supporters are celebrating, those who support opposition, those who support Venancio Mondlane, they keep the initial complaint that the elections were rigged. And we have information that they'll keep protesting until we see justice in the process.
So there has been tensions, Amancio, around the country all week in anticipation of the results you just mentioned. Now that the results have been announced, you are there. Are things calming down?
No, things are not really calming down. And at the same time, today, this morning here in Maputo, even in the posh areas, most businesses were closed. Some banks, they opened until noon. Even restaurants, cafes, and other kind of business, they were all closed because people fear that when people go on the streets complaining, they might destroy some infrastructure. So the situation is not improving, and some analysts are saying that actually the situation can even worsen. At the same time, you hear business people are complaining that these protests are already damaging and already weak economy.
Any word from opposition presidential candidate Venancio Mondlane, who has called for nationwide protests, alleging that the governing Frelimo party has rigged the election?
They keep the same position, that the Frelimo party rigged the election. We haven't heard, since the results were announced, any position from or anything different from Venancio Mondlane. You should also remember that Venancio Mondlane was busy in the last 2 days in the burial of his two member parties who were murdered here in Maputo.
How about the ruling party's candidate, Daniel Chapo? Did he officially make any statements on his victory?
Not yet, but we have information that the Frelimo party members, they get together in some places to celebrate while they were listening to the results. So they're in a different mood. There's not yet an official statement from the candidate.
And one thing, Anancio, Renamo, which had been the official opposition party, but whose candidate came third this time around, how did that come about?
They lost. The people of Renamo, they lost confidence from supporters, with people suspecting that they are not complaining enough in issues related to the country, saying that the Renamo members in parliament, they were not making their voice heard when it comes to major issues in the country. And there came this new candidate, Venancio Mondlane, who was coming with issues related to the young people, and that's why he got many supporters, especially in the city. And Renamo now is the third most important party in the country. They used to be leading the opposition for the last 20 years. Mozambique started this democratic elections in 1994, and now they're no longer the leading opposition party, a position now taken by Podemos with their candidate, Venancio Mondlane.
VOA's Portuguese to Africa reporter Amancio Vilancoles standing by, briefing us from Mozambique's capital, Maputo. Thank you for your input.
Thank you. See you next time.
Libya's political process and national reconciliation efforts were the focus of discussion between Abdullah Al-Lafi, Vice President of the Presidential Council, and UN Deputy Special Envoy Stephanie Curry on Tuesday. According to the Presidential Council Media Office, the meeting explored ways to advance political dialogue and push forward the country's reconciliation initiatives. Al-Lafi emphasized the necessity of a clear political roadmap to break the current stalemate and pave the way for long-delayed elections. Wolfgang Porstai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, discussed these developments with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
The UN-sponsored Shkirat Agreement from 2015 contributed significantly to the deep rift in the country, which culminated in Khalifa Haftar's failed bloody attempt to conquer Tripoli in 2019 and 20. Thereafter, in 2020, the UN-sponsored Libya Political Dialogue Forum led to the appointment of nowadays Prime Minister Dabeiba, who contributed to torpedo the very same elections he was here to organize. In June last year, 6+6 committee of the two rival parliaments, the HOR and the HCS, drafted election laws that were subsequently endorsed by both parliaments, but are still somehow contested. In March this year, the HOR and the HCS agreed in Cairo to appoint a new prime minister, but the process is stuck. Current political work in the High Council of State is paralyzed due to the dispute over the outcome of the chair's election on 6 August. The reconciliation process, sponsored by the African Union, is also stuck. So I would say Al-Lafi is right. Altogether, there is certainly a need for a new plan with a clear political roadmap to get things moving again. Otherwise, I fear the country will further on slowly disintegrate.
The two officials reaffirmed the UN mission's commitment to aiding Libya's reconciliation efforts and overcoming barriers to organizing a comprehensive national conference. Is that an attempt to revive the national conference idea that was aborted by the Libyan National Army's military campaign against Tripoli?
I would say so. The deep rift between the supporters of Khalid al-Mishri and Mohamed Takala for the leadership of the High Council of State could lead to a fading away of the already limited political influence of the HCS. Nevertheless, without a functioning HCS, whose roles and responsibilities are enshrined in the Libya Political Agreement, the Shkirat Agreement, the House of Representatives won't have a partner to discuss and eventually agree on important issues like the sovereign positions and the way forward to elections. Altogether, this would certainly complicate the already very difficult situation in Libya, and it could increase the centrifugal forces in the country. Therefore, it certainly makes sense to look for alternatives. A comprehensive national conference might be a way out. Libya is, unfortunately, a very good example for failed UN stabilization initiatives. Shkirat and the LPDF show how not to do it. You cannot select your own negotiation partners, disconnected from the realities on the ground, and expect every stakeholder to accept this. This time, there must be a clear and transparent criteria for the selection of the participants. And if the conference should be really successful, those must not only represent the Libyan society, including the tribes, but also the warring factions, those who have really the power on the ground.
Business development team at the National Oil Corporation discussed with officials from the British Petroleum's BP the company's desire to expand investment in Libya, which contributes to increasing oil production. Would that contribute to a more stable Libya?
A stable oil production is a precondition for a stable Libya, and therefore I would say yes. The Libyan oil industry is in dire need of foreign investments, but not only to increase production, but even to sustain the current 1.2 million barrels per day. On the other side, Libya does not much to attract foreign companies as well. So while the sweet crude oil and the technical ease of extraction and the short transportation routes to Europe still make investments in Libya attractive for international companies, Libya needs to realize that crude oil is also available at other locations, and the global peak of oil demand is reached soon. But I hope that the Libyans start realizing this soon.
That was Wolfgang Poshtai, former Austrian military attaché in Libya, speaking with VOA's Mohammed Al-Shenawi. Today, Zambia gained independence from British rule, setting the stage for founding President Kenneth Kaunda to play a significant role in helping liberation movements in other African nations fight for freedom. That includes South Africa's African National Congress, ANC, and the Southwest Africa People's Organization, SWAPO, which fought for Namibia's independence. To learn more about Zambia's contributions, VOA's Pauline Diho spoke with Dr. Sombo Muzata, director of the Masters of Public Administration Program and assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at James Madison University.
Zambia turns 60. It's a day of great celebration, but it is also a day of reflection. So independence, of course, means freeing ourselves, so freeing the black people in Zambia from minority white rule. 2024 happens to be the year in which Kenneth Kaunda turns 100 years old. He was a visionary leader, and I think that few leaders today or in the past could match up to the kind of ideals and values that he stood for. So Zambia supported many countries across the continent because we were a member of the Liberation Movement Committee. And that committee, I think, was founded in 62 or 63, and Zambia was a member of that. We supported, I think, Tanzania. Tanzania got independence earlier than us, but Zambia supported Tanzania with their independence struggle, providing logistical support and as a base for some of their people. We supported South Africa. That's like an open secret. Even when Nelson Mandela came out of prison, the first country that he visited was Zambia. We played a very, very critical role in their independence struggle over there, fighting apartheid. We also supported Namibia with their fight for liberation. So I think we did play a very critical role in the countries that surround us. And I think that has to be commended. It's something that we have to celebrate. Kenneth Kaunda had in his mind that Africa will not be free, or Zambia will not be free until every other country is free. So with that kind of philosophical underpinning, we can see that he put his all in this fight for liberation of other countries.
Fascinating stuff. It's interesting that you say that Kenneth Kaunda had the vision of saying that Africa will not be free until everyone is free. It looks like that was the rallying calls for all these freedom fighters back in the day. You look at the likes of Kwame Nkrumah, you go down to Kenneth Kaunda, Milton Obote, Abdel Nasser. All those guys had like the same vision. But today, you can almost count on your fingers how many leaders are like that.
It's really sad that the fabric of Pan-Africanism has totally went off, or I would say totally went off, actually. There is this idea of every country for themselves and God for us all. And I think that that is problematic in itself.
What does 60 years of independence mean to an ordinary woman on the street, an ordinary woman in Chipata, where you come from?
Most are going to be celebrating because it's an occasion worth celebrating. If you were born post-independence like me, you probably grew up in a Zambia where Independence Day was a very big celebration. I still, would like to see many women in Chipata, where I grew up, to get excited about this moment and to be thankful for the peace that we have had. We are the beacon of peace on the African continent. And also to be hopeful because there's a lot more that the country is going to be able to attain.
That was Dr. Sambo Muzata, Director of the Masters of Public Administration Program and an assistant professor in the Department of Political Science at James Madison University, speaking with VOA's Paul Indiho. You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And of course, we'd love to hear from you so you can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. That number is +1 202 258 3076. Every Wednesdays, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on African News Tonight. In the U.S. presidential campaign, there is little to agree on between supporters of Kamala Harris and supporters of Donald Trump. From Southern California, Ginia Dulot brings us the story of two people selling rival campaign merchandise who are trying to lower the political temperature of their customers.
When California Democrat Sandra Roby saw a booth selling Donald Trump merchandise, she was frustrated by her party's low visibility in the community and decided to open a Kamala Harris booth.
Up until relatively recently, we did not promote our political beliefs out loud. It was something you just kept close to your heart and you lived respectfully amongst each other. But when Trump entered the stage, it all changed. It became kind of like World Federation Wrestling or a sports team, and we could no longer be invisible.
Orange County, California is a solidly Republican enclave in this overwhelmingly Democratic state. Republicans Elvie and Eddie Pantig don't like the Harris booth.
We don't want that.
You don't want them together, side by side?
No.
No. Why not?
Well, you know, Orange County is supposed to be Republican, you know. And side by side is, you know,
and
one, maybe another corner, you know, separate.
In a separate corner, but not together.
California Republican Steve Lawrence runs the Trump merchandise booth. He says there was a bit of tension with Roby at first, but they eventually agreed to share the space.
Just because I'm Republican and she's Democrat, there's no reason that we can't coexist here in the same location. We have different feelings, different opinions about things. Certainly people wear their emotions on their sleeves, but you know, we don't need to have hate that comes into the political views of both parties. We can coexist without having to be so meanful about it.
Democrat Susan Johnson says having the two stalls side by side is a good idea.
I think it's really smart. You know, I think if people just get down and, you know, talk to each other, that they can find a whole lot more in common.
Republican Zaid Habaibi says the stalls show Americans can get along without always agreeing.
This is the freedom that I speak out my mind and I tell what I believe in. I follow the the democracy regulations in this country. In the meantime, the other party can do as well.
Roby and Lawrence say they have become friends over the last few months and watch out for each other to make sure they're both safe. They say their sign, "We both ask, please be nice," helps lower their customers' political temperatures. Jenya Dulo, VOA News, North Tustin, California.
Some Somali Americans living in Somalia are closely monitoring the U.S. presidential elections, focusing on foreign policy and investment in Africa, while participating by casting absentee ballots. Reporter Abdul Kadir Zubier spoke to two of them in the capital, Mogadishu, and has this report with Abdulaziz Osman, narrated by Anthony Labruto.
Mohamed Dahir Farah leads the Somali American Network Association, or SANA, an organization that fosters connection between Somali Americans and Somalia. A decade ago, he returned to Somalia from the U.S., but remains involved in American politics, staying informed about the country's ongoing political debates. Farah describes the absentee voting process as straightforward.
I casted my vote as an absentee ballot. We use a website called FBCA. You fill a form, you sign the form, and it has an address that you mail to this form, and you're good to go. That's the instruction and the direction we received from the embassy in Somalia and Kenya, both. I did it a month ago, and I believe everything is set.
Farah says that Somalia faced challenges due to shifts in U.S. foreign policy, particularly regarding security aid. Drawing from his experiences both as a Somali American and his role within his community, he said that he is concerned that a new administration may not continue to support Somalia's counterterrorism efforts.
Foreign policy, is in terms of security, one experience I had during my time in Africa or Somalia as an American and also as the head of Somali American Network Association is how the Somali government suffered when the security support has been cut by the U.S. Government. It was during Trump time, I remember.
Farah said that around 4,000 Somali Americans currently live in various regions of Somalia, with many serving as business owners, consultants to the Somali federal government, and employees of international organizations. Among them is Mohamed Aden Dini, a human rights activist and Somali parliament member based in Mogadishu. He says a key issue expats in Africa during this election is the need for the U.S. to maintain its investments in Africa and strengthen relations with African nations.
Africans, they expect that the United States will do a lot of investment. So when you talk to the grassroots and also the African people who are African descent, American people who are African descent, they also want to see U.S. to invest more in African continents.
In a recent interview with VOA in Mogadishu, U.S. Ambassador to Somalia, Richard Riley, said the U.S. is Somalia's largest donor and security partner, providing tens of billions of dollars over the years in personnel, equipment, and funding. Praising the contribution of Somali Americans in the U.S. and also of those who have returned to Somalia to rebuild their homeland.
We're very proud to have over 150,000 Somalis who've come to our country. They're an enormous benefit to our country and to your country. Many have come back to help build the nation here. So we're delighted that they are here. They are participating. So I would say maintain the hope. It's very important and it's real.
Despite being thousands of miles away from U.S. elections, Somali American expats not only cast their votes for their second home in the U.S., but also play a role in the growth and stability of their homeland, Somalia, bridging both worlds and shaping the future. For Abdul Qadir Zubair in Mogadishu, Somalia, and Abdulaziz Osman, Anthony Labruto, VOA Africa.
Americans and people around the world are watching closely as the race for the 47th President of the United States unfolds. Voice of America is your trusted source for comprehensive coverage. From daily updates to in-depth analysis, our correspondents will keep you informed every step of the way. Tune in on radio, TV, or online as we count down to November 5th when the results are announced. Stay informed. Stay with Voice of America.
VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, television, and the internet on voaafrica.com.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiya Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Adrius Rigas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.